Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. Today, the part of interesting person is being played by, I think, my first guest from the UK, Janice B. Gordon. Janice is the customer growth expert, and mid-cap companies hire her to unleash hidden potential and accelerate growth by investing in customer-centric selling. She's a consultant, a speaker, a trainer. She's listed number 25 on the top 100 global business influencers. She's also the author of Business Evolution. Ooh, that's awesome. That's a lot. Janice, how are you today?
I'm happy to represent.
Very good. And I'm sure you will represent very well. And as you are representing, since we're doing something new, I decided to also do something new as far as our sponsor. Our sponsor today, Urban Renewal Brewery. They've had a lot of great beers I've been drinking, but I am actually drinking their Hazy River IPA. Yes, I am drinking a hazy IPA on the air that is definitely out of my regular wheelhouse. And I've had a sip already. I'm not going to lie. It's not bad. I don't know if it's converting me to the Hazy IPA fan club, but it's got some nice citrus notes. It's good stuff. Thank you to Urban Renewal for sponsoring us. And Janice, here's my question to kind of kick us off. I'm actually really excited to have somebody from outside of the US on the show. And I want to talk about sales with you. When you think about how you work with clients, and I know you work with a broad range of clients, is there anything that you've noticed different in kind of the sales culture or the sales approach based on a country or the culture that the larger cultural context you're in? Like, are there differences between selling in the UK versus the United States versus Europe versus Asia? Anything that, like, what have you noticed?
My first business, this was like late 1980s, was actually selling designs in America.
Okay.
And so that was my introduction to sales. And I think it's not so much about sales, it's just what's behind that, the cultural differences. And that remains true whether it's in the 1980s or, you know, the period we're in now, 2020. Culturally in America, people are very much more upfront and they're very straight and to the point. You know, we're here, yep, to sell, let's go do it. Whereas
right.
Sometimes in England, we're a bit shy about asking for the sale, and that's a real downfall because we're in a selling situation. But I think what's happened is that the sales hasn't really changed, but customers have, and they're global customers, and they have particular needs and behaviours, and that seems to be the same all over the world, in that they really want you to identify the need and help them, nurture them through their own process. Because many sales, the sales environment I work in is B2B and tends to be the more complicated end of sales than the kind of transactional end of sales. And the number of people you have to build relationships as a salesperson would be perhaps about 5 to 10 people within a company, perhaps even more than that. So I think there are differences in the sales personality based on the culture that you're in, but I actually don't think there's a very much difference in terms of the buyers and what the buyer behaviors and requirements are.
Interesting.
And I think that's the thing that unifies sales wherever you are in the world. It doesn't really matter what you want to do. It's actually how your customer wants you to do it for them. And that's the thing that with the skills we all need to learn.
Right. Okay. No, I love that. So a couple of things there. In many ways, it sounds like you're talking about something that I talk about a lot with my clients, and I've written about my books, is the sales Sherpa path, right? The idea of being a good salesperson is really about being the guide for the customer along their own journey, right? Which is what I'm hearing. But it's really interesting that you kind of point out that, yeah, the sales process is the same, but it's almost because of the cultural context of different customers, how you approach that or how you help them understand the process is going to change a little bit. It sounds like, for example, in the States, we'd just be like, all right, you got a problem. I'm going to sell you a solution and you're going to buy it versus and I've sensed that a little bit in my interactions with people outside the United States. And, you know, I've got family in Ireland. I've been to Ireland many times, UK a number of times. It is a different cultural milieu, if you will. Right.
Yeah.
Is there actually something though, to the fact that because of the more relationship-based process for business in general, that actually will help salespeople be more successful as we transition to more relationship-based selling?
It's essential. So it's not that it will help. It's absolutely essential. If you want to do the sale, it's all about the relationship. But you can't forget, the relationship gets you in the door. It gets you to the right. Know, like, and perhaps trust. But remember that I said that it's a team of people that make the decision. So you have to influence across a lot of different preferences to know, like, and trust, because we all have different personalities. So in the way that you build the relationship is going to change. So it's not just culturally, but it's on an individual level as well. We all have different priorities. So it may be one company, but there may be 10 or 12 different priorities that you, and they're the needs that you have to meet. So it's really, once you've gone through the building of the individual relationships within a company, it's about the value that you're offering. So the value proposition, and making sure that you hone that once you've gathered all of the different preferences and needs within the company and prioritize them, and everyone understands each other's point of view, which is the negotiation process that you need to go through. Then it's really highlighting on the value add, you know, what is the kind of partnership going forward? How are you fulfilling those particular needs from a major or minor point of view? How are you solving not only the customer's immediate problem, but actually bearing in mind that your customer is serving a customer, which is their immediate priority, and using various measures in order to demonstrate what the results will be. Measurement is really important as part of the value proposition, because it's like percentages. People can really understand what the results will be if you're able to help them to visualize not only the journey, but what the results will be, and also what that will feel like, what difference it will make, what percentage return are they get, how much better that life will be.
Well, and so it's interesting. We often talk about that ROI, which I think is really critical. And I would say definitely in the more transactional past, in the decade before the pandemic, we saw, especially in the States, but I think you're right that this was definitely in the B2B world, kind of a global phenomena. There was this kind of focus almost on taking the personalization out, the humanity out, right? Because it was like, how do we scale? How do we send as many emails as possible? How do we do as much business as possible? Because getting to know your customer, really engaging in a relationship, takes time, energy, and effort, right? And some skill. That can be hard to teach, but if I can get somebody just on the right, you know, CRM and outreach cadence, I don't have to even worry about that. What is interesting to me is that the kind of, how to say this? What's interesting is that the global pandemic has really maybe shown a light on some of the gaps that selling created. And it's really refocused on this need for, I can think what you said, like this human to human selling, where you're really focused on what are the needs of not only the prospect's organization, but what the prospect themselves and what each of those prospects, each of those stakeholders actually needs. Is that right?
I think that's absolutely right. And I would totally agree with you.
Guess what? You can come on the show anytime that you want to completely agree with me. That's that's it. That's the secret to any
we're
guest.
Done just here.
Agree with me. We're done. Just agree with me. Thank you. If Well, I could get my wife to do that. You know,
have I done that in record time? I think I may have done it in record time. Normally it takes 25 minutes before you know, get your guest to submit to agreeing to you.
If that, right? Sorry to interrupt. Okay, so you're saying...
you know, I completely agree that I think the pandemic has enabled us to, certainly it's happened with me, take a step back. Some are salespeople, some of them have lost their jobs. Some of them in the UK have been furloughed, so they can't work for the 3 months. But that's kind of a job protection scheme. Some of them are in growth businesses, so they're still, you know, working, but albeit doing it from home. Whatever situation you're in, it's allowed you to step back and have a little bit more time and space. You save time from all the traveling you used to do. So you can do more work working from home, or if you're not working at all, you've now got the space to think about, why is this important to me? Do I really want to do this? Do I want to get on the, you know, road again when this all opens up? You know, how do I feel I've been treated by the company? Have I got all of the tools and equipment to do my job? You're going to be asking yourself all of these questions. What is my life worth? You know, if you've lost anyone in your family, do I really want to be doing this for the rest of my life? Does it make me happy? All of these things are you know, completely blown up. And so because of that, we're not only thinking about ourselves, we're also thinking about how we interact with our families, our friends, our customers, our, you know, employees, everybody. Everything is really up for renegotiation. And I think because you're thinking about, I really love what I do or I don't love what I do, but if I'm going to invest my time in it, I really want to focus in on the things that make me happy. And the things that make me happy are often making other people happy. And that is doing a really good job or doing it in a way without the pressure. And so I really do think that people will move away from being totally focused on hitting target, which has no real, it has value for the business, but it kills you. It absolutely kills you, you know? And rather thinking about how they can build better, more valued relationships, whoever that may be, personally and professionally. They're the things that really feed your soul. And how can I do a better job? What other skills do I need? I think this is a great time to really reset, not only from an individual point of view, but from an organizational point of view, thinking about what do we need to do? What's our purpose? How are we going to achieve that? How are we going to create a legacy? So it's not only from a personal, but it's from a professional and organizational point of view. So I think, you know, sales is the bedrock and the engine room of all businesses. Nothing goes without selling, even to our partners. You know, we're always negotiating and selling. And so because it's so fundamental to everything that we do in business, I really do think and pray and hope that this time that we've been allowed, is the gift that we've been allowed, is going to allow us to reset and modernize our sales mindset, which is fundamental to who we are and how we want to create our legacy in life.
I love what you said there. I also know that you're definitely not in the United States when you're like, well, it's not really about quota, you know, maybe. But it's ironic because I think that's right. I think the idea of, I mean, one number I saw even before, of course, all of this happened, and, you know, for posterity, we are recording this. We're at least in Chicago, we're in week 9 of the shelter in place order. So we're getting a little squirrely here for sure. And I know you're facing something similar over in the UK. But I do think it's humans, unfortunately, are resistant to learning. But your idea of going, hey, is this really what I want to do? And then when you say, yes, it is, committing to success, not because I'm trying to hit the number. Oh, and I was saying that even before this pandemic, you know, I think quota attainment was at about 50 or 60%. At that point, I go, maybe it's not the salespeople's problem. Maybe it's the quota's problem, right? Or the structure that we've created. But I do think you're right that if you can commit to doing sales, because you want to be there, because this drives happiness in whatever way it means, or realizing that you don't want it and then you get out. What's ironic is that if that's how you approach selling, you're going to blow past any artificially created quota, right? Like the most successful salespeople I've met are never ones that are like, oh, I've got to hit quota. Like they're there for another reason, right?
Yeah, they have a purpose. That's the thing that drives them. And you know that stat, 50% quota, hitting 50%, that's been around for 30 years. Now, what does that tell you? We haven't improved on that. So it's not quotas that drive people. So I'm not saying that if we do away with quotas that businesses will go down. Actually, you've got to replace it with something else, something that people value, whether it's from a buyer's point of view or from a seller's point of view. And that is really purpose. That's the thing that really drives us. And you're going to smash targets. Business will flow in when you focus on the things that really add value.
I love that. It's making me think of the book Drive by Dan Pink, which you might be familiar with. And a lot of people in the sales world know of his other book, To Sell as Human, which also is a fantastic book. But in Drive, he talks about, and of course, I'm not going to remember the three, but he talks about three things. I believe purpose is like that drive human beings. He's talking about motivation. One is purpose. One is autonomy. And oh man, I forget what the third one is. We'll look it up and put it in the show notes. But a lot of that book talks about exactly what you're saying. Like if you're just trying to get routine activities accomplished, meaning it doesn't take a lot of brain power. It doesn't take a lot of creativity. Then having a quota, having a number makes sense because you're just going, hey, I need to, make X widgets in an hour. Having a number makes sense. But he points out that, and especially the way you're conceptualizing sales, not transactions, but relationships and managing, 5 to 10 people and different priorities and coming up with solutions and building trust, all that. Like that's not a routine rote activity, right? There's a much broader context that needs to be seen in that. And so in Dan Pink's book, he points out quotas don't work. Numbers don't work in that situation. And apparently we just haven't gotten that. We haven't gotten that message after
the
3 decades.
The memo hasn't got there yet.
It's sitting in the junk email box.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in spam.
So if we think about post pandemic or really more to the point, even post pandemic, post economic fallout from the pandemic, what do you hope to see? And again, I think that unfortunately organizations and people are often resistant to change, but what do you think would be a good outcome for a salesperson, 6 months, a year down the line? Like what should they be doing now to be a more effective salesperson or really just anybody? Because as you point out, we all sell, right? Even if it's just trying to convince our wife of where we should go for dinner. Not that I know that from previous experience.
I think the fallout will be that will be autonomy. Will be that people will make decisions about how they want to live and how they want to transact their life, and they'll take more control over that. They've had a taste of it now. I think that managers that have been really nervous about their sales team working remotely and not having, their eyes on what they're doing, they've now had to relax into that because we're in the new normal. But actually, they'll discover that the salespeople are actually working harder, like all people that work remotely. They work longer and they work harder and they're happier. Not all people, I say, many people. My sister, who's extroverted, she's completely going up the wall. And I'm in my bubble, happy as Larry. I mean, we often say we haven't lost anybody, so we're allowed to be, and very grateful that we're allowed to be in this bubble. So I must add that. But so what's going to happen is people are going to start making choices. And then the thing is, this has been coming down the line for a long time. It's just been the pandemic has shifted this up, that we're asking ourselves these questions. The commercial properties are going to go down. People will not want to, you know, be traveling into work. I think that people are going, as I've said, made choices about how they want to work. Buyers are not really going to be seeing much of a difference. You know, if 2 years from now, we're still going to the trade shows and conferences and that, you know, and it will take that time. You know, 2 years from now, we'll be traveling slightly less, but, you know, it's going to go, it will go up as soon as we're able to.
Right.
Because you can't replace the face-to-face. I think so. I don't think in the big scheme of things, things are going to change enormously. Maybe in terms of travel, it might be 80% of what it was at its height also.
Right.
But I think it's in the small things. I really do think it's in the small things, and that companies are going to have to offer employees, all employees, more choice about the way that they work, and have we've always had the technology, they're going to be able to use this technology to allow people to flex and change and be more adaptable. So I think it's in the small things. I think what's good has always been a divide in sales between men and women. You know, we've got to face the fact that women take more of the load of the kind of household and childcare and, you know, family.
What do you mean? Just because every study has shown that over time, all the research points to that, I have to completely agree. Darn it. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
They will be able to balance things a little bit better if they have that additional flexibility. Because there are the studies to say that when women are in the workplace doing sales, they're crushing it. They're absolutely crushing it. Because they're using a lot of the natural relationship building that they do on a daily basis. So I think perhaps it will allow more women into sales that can only be a good thing, because there'll be more flexibility in the working practices that allow them to not only manage the heavy load of their home lives, but also to work fully in the workplace.
I think you're right. And I think what I see is, because I think there is this current of thought that because of work from home, because of everything that's happened, all of a sudden this is actually pushing us to a more remote workforce. And I actually disagree. I think that what we're really going to see is a lot more, kind of as you pointed out, flexibility, where face-to-face, in-person is always going to be the best way to communicate with someone. I love Zoom calls. I do many of them. I love being able to see people's faces. It's still not the same as sitting down. Like, this conversation is great. It's still not the same as if we were in a pub, you know, having a pint, and that can't be replaced. But the idea of, as you said, even if it's just 80%, of the travel that we used to have, all of a sudden people are not traveling that 20%, or a sales force might have a desk in the office, but 2 days a week they work from home. And I do think that you're right, that it's going to allow more women in the workforce. And the stats all show that women, when they sell, crush it. And especially in the new normal, because they're good at relationships, which is what's critical. But it'll be also interesting to see, you know, the stereotypical man who now has the opportunity to work from home 1 or 2 days a week, right? Be with his family more. And I mean, I guess that's men and women, like just saying, hey, I'm going to go in the office 3 days a week and I'm going to be at home 2 days a week, get that balance. Because I do think that what shelter in place is also showing, not just for extroverts, I'm an introvert myself, and I'm, you know, going a little stir crazy, is that we do need to be able to go out into the world, interact. And some of us like working in an office, some of us don't, but just having that flexibility and that autonomy is super, super powerful. Yeah. And I think that is a wonderful place to have a completely non sequitur change in our conversation topic, which I think in this season I'm becoming famous for, or famous at least in my own head. So let's talk music, because you share with me one of your favorite albums, which is actually one of my favorite albums. It actually allowed me to start to embrace a love of jazz, Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. Just an amazing album. Why do you like Kind of Blue?
I love music, but because I work from home, I normally have, you know, chill out lounge music. I can't have any lyrics because my mind will latch onto lyrics and then it distracts me with work. But Kind of Blue, I rediscovered it as I do probably once a month or so. And more so now because there's so many, you know, space and complexity in it. And it, on so many levels, I was really thinking about why do I, you know, press rewind on this so much at this time. And, you know, the first track is called So What? And I suppose that's a bit of my attitude at the moment. So What?
Sorry. I started to try to hum it. And I'm like, wait, I probably shouldn't do that.
Please don't spoil the track in my head.
Fair enough.
And you know, and you've got kind of like, so what, like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then you've got so what question mark, which is the investigation and hidden depths and self-discovery. And I think that is, you know, with the pandemic around, it's like, okay, so what, brush it off, you know, I can't control it, I'm just getting on with it. And then the other so what is actually going in on itself and really kind of understanding more about myself and what's important to me, and those great conversations that you kind of might have with a family and friend that you've never had time for, and it takes you down to another level. So it's that kind of almost simplicity, because we haven't got all of the distractions and, you know, the rushing around, but also it's that complexity, that kind of delving down another level. So right. I love jazz for that, because every time you listen to it, you hear something else. It's so deep and so many different levels, but also you can listen to it as background music as well.
Oh, I love that. I had an experience when I was younger, and this is definitely you know, pre-child, yeah, I think even pre-wife, but I remember having an evening where I actually just laid down in the dark and listened to that, like just listened to that album straight through and just focused on it. And I remember that was the moment I was like, oh, I get, when I say I get this, I definitely don't get it. There are, as you say, there are layers, but I got the form of the music. And it was literally after that that I was like, oh, I want to find out more about jazz.
Yeah.
And I want to actually, you know, and obviously being in Chicago, we had a lot of great jazz music, a lot of great jazz clubs. And I'd been into swing dancing for years, so I had some exposure, but not the kind of just, you know, Miles Davis, Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk kind of jazz. And then I was like, all right, I get it. And you're right, it's fantastic background music for working. I also am like you. I like the chill out lounge. I like jazz hop. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Yeah.
Like that one's fun. It's got a good driving, you know, hip hop beat, but still kind of relaxed. But no, that I'm so glad you mentioned that album, because it's by the way, if you're listening and you haven't heard that album, go listen to So What on YouTube or something. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah. You'll thank me.
Yeah, exactly. You'll say thank you. Thank you, Janice, for helping me out. And so here's the other question I had. And we just have a few minutes left, but so important. What is up with shandies? Because this has now come to the States. I know this has been big on that side of the pond for a while.
Yeah.
What? And now you're over here.
I do have to apologize to you for that, because, you know, it kills beer. You're adding lemonade to it, you know. Right. You may go 50-50 or 80-20, you know. It's like, you just almost doesn't matter what beer you put in there, you're going to kill it.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. I'm sorry to your sponsors. I'm sorry to every brewery. I'm sorry. You know?
Oh, Janice, you have to understand, it's getting big over here where breweries actually actually make it. Like, you can buy it in the bottle.
Yeah.
Like a pre-made shandy, which I don't know if that makes it better or worse. I don't know.
It always makes it worse. Come on. You know? I mean, you just pour the lemonade in, for heaven's sake. You know? How difficult is that?
So where did this come from? Was it just like some British guys going, well, okay, I can't have a straight beer because it's really hot. And over there in the UK, really hot is probably about 75 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, which is not that warm over here. But so they're like, we're going to put some lemonade in, so we're still drinking beer, but it's, I don't get it.
No, it's more sexist than that, actually, you know, because the women couldn't handle a beer. You put a bit of lemonade into
it. Oh, you think that's what it is?
Probably. I'm not sure. But you know what? That drinks, beverage, I'm not a big alcoholic drinker, but, you know, beverages remind me of events. And the reason why I chose Shandy is because it reminds me of joy, holiday. You know, when it's, you know, hot and it's more than 70 degrees. Thank you very much, D-Fish. you know, when it's hot and you're thirsty and you know that water won't quench the thirst and you need a little bit of sweetness with it and you go to a Shandy and it's, oh, you know, it's just,
I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Miller High Life. I don't know if they have it over there, yeah, but Miller High Life. All right. It's, you know, it's beer flavored water, but it just makes me think of it's, you know, 90 degrees and we're barbecuing here in Chicago. And I'm like, yeah, it takes you right back. Yeah. I'm actually just now remembering. So before we had our son, my wife and I had a chance to travel to Portugal. And we spent about a week in one of the little villages kind of on the Mediterranean coast. And the little village happened to be full. It was full, like I kid you, full of British tourists. Because of course, that's where you go. It was like, we realized it was like our Mexico. It's like a couple hours. You're like, oh, it's close. And so we were sitting in a pub one day and it was kind of off season and it was packed. And we were the only Americans in there. We were also the only people under the age of under the age of 50. Like it was all 50 to 60 year old British people. And it was all gin and tonics and shandies. We were just looking around like, huh, okay, this is a different, this is definitely a good, interesting cultural experience.
Yeah.
And we had the most amazing conversations. People asked us many, many questions about the United States. And I had to be like, hey, it's a big country. There's a lot of different opinions.
Come on. You know, I remember going over to my dad, and I've got lots of family there. So I've been going over to America for years now. And people asking me, have you met the Queen? It's like, okay, I know we're a small country, but, you know, she doesn't just pop out around the corner at Sainsbury's.
Well, but Janice, that's because they met you and they realized you just had this regal attitude about you. They're like, oh, she must have tea with the Queen every fortnight. There, I've just used all of my British-isms that I know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But the other thing is because I have an English accent coming out of a black woman, that's the other thing that is like, eh, doesn't quite sit in America, you know. So maybe they think I must be royalty. I don't know. Do you think?
There you go. I like it. We're just going to go with that. You just got to say you are. Perfect.
No one would know any difference. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
Lady Janice B. Gordon, hey?
Yeah, you know, Janice B. Gordon Esquire, or, you know, her, you know, the Duchess.
Yes,
you know,
exactly, whatever. The Duchess.
They don't know. I once in high school, I wore a kilt to my prom. I had another friend who went to an all female high school, a friend of mine and also of my girlfriend at the time. And she's like, hey, I don't have a date. Will you come to my prom with me? And my girlfriend was like, yeah, sure. That's not fine. We had just one as friends. And I wore this kilt and we thought it would be a gas if I said I was from Ireland. Because that was the only accent I could kind of do. And we convinced everybody at the prom with my horrible accents that, you know, I was from Ireland. They didn't know. They're like, wow, that's so unique.
And suddenly you became exotic.
Exactly. The one time in my life I've ever been exotic.
And all you had to do is put on a skirt.
Hey, I got great legs. All right. And before I say anything else to embarrass myself completely, what a wonderful time to wrap things up. So Janice, I always ask all of my guests at the end of our conversation, what's one tip that you would give to somebody to help them have a better day today?
I think ask yourself, what part will I play today? Thinking about what your big, either weekly or annual goal may be, just look at what part am I playing today? What bit of that can I achieve in that day? And write that down and really focus on that and then go out and do that.
I love that. I love that. What is a good way for people to follow up with you if they want to continue the conversation?
Janice B. Gordon, whether it's Twitter, LinkedIn, all the channels, that's where you'll find me. Don't forget my B now.
Don't forget the B for sure. And we'll, of course, have all of the links in the show notes. And I do also want to thank our sponsor, Urban Renewal Brewery. They're right here in Chicago in the Ravenswood neighborhood. They've actually been expanding beyond Chicago into Illinois. So if you can find them, definitely pick them up. I've been drinking the Hazy River IPA, and I have gone on record many times saying I'm not a huge IPA fan, and that is the truth. But I will say this has been a delightful beer that I've been sipping on as we've gone through the conversation here. So thank you to Urban Renewal. And by the way, if you can't find Urban Renewal somewhere, hopefully you can, but if not, go support your local craft brewery. They're a small business. They're trying to make things happen, bring good beer to your community. Take care of them. Go stop by their tap room or just go pick something up from them when, or even if you're at the grocery store, you see a craft brewery on the shelf, you support the little guys. The big guys, yeah, we need to help them out too. But during this time, the little guys definitely need a little extra love. And thank you so much for joining us on this conversation. We'll be back with more conversations. And if you want to reach out to me directly, feel free just to find me on Twitter at dfishrockstar. Would love to chat. And with that, be well, and we'll talk next time. Bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.